Council, the first one of 2021, and we're still meeting virtually. We're all experts now, I think, in this. My name is Kirby Fye. If you join via WebEx, I'm listed under Amy Holland, but I'm Kirby Fye with the department. Just a few things I'd like to go over before we get started. Per Executive Order 71, this meeting will be recorded and it will be posted to the department website within the next day or two. With that being said, if you're not speaking, please make sure your phone or your computer are muted just to prevent any feedback from coming through. Also, if you have any questions or if you're presenting or anything like that, please make sure you state your name to help with the minutes. I know that will be very helpful to Kayla. I'm going to go ahead and go through attendance. I'm going to just go through the members who have joined via WebEx first because I could see the names listed, and then I will go through the individuals who have joined via phone. So let me go ahead and get started. And Sam, we can always circle back around at the end if we see that anyone else has joined the call after attendance has been taken, just so it can be accurate for your minutes. So like I said, I'm Kirby Fye with the department. We also have Avis Easley with the department, Becky McKinney. Let's see if I can get my computer to work. Jason, is this Jason Abernathy? Jason? I think it's Jason Abernathy. Jay Zimmerman, Jeannie Price, Kayla Sharp, Christy Tipton, Kubra or Cal Bryant, Laurel Maxey, is it Laurel or Laurel? Okay, I see her audio is not working.
Laurel.
Oh, hi, Laurel. Melanie, I don't have a...
Welcome to WebEx. Enter your access code or PIN number, followed by pound.
This. Okay, sorry about that. Melanie, what's your last name, Melanie? I think you're muted.
Enter your attendee ID.
Hi, this is Melanie Eisen.
Hi, Melanie.
Your attendee number.
Rebecca Blevins. Roger Cassell. Sam, are you logged in twice, Sam, or is there two different Sams?
That would be a second.
Hold on one second. I don't know why this is getting a lot of feedback. Hold on one second. Let me fix this. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay, I have two Sams listed. I know Sam Slagle is on the call. Is there another Sam on the call, or is it just you twice?
I'm Samantha Prater.
Oh, okay. Welcome.
Thank you.
Sarah, can you state your last name, Sarah?
DeAndrea.
Hi.
Hi.
Wendy Ramsey. And I also see someone join from TCCY. Can you state your name?
Hi, this is Jill Stott.
Hi, Jill. Okay, it looks like we have a few individuals who have called in. If you don't mind to state your name.
Stephanie, hi, this is Vonda Wagner.
Okay, I heard Vonda Wagner.
Stephanie Bullock.
Stephanie Bullock, welcome.
Jason Abernathy.
Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Emily Wells.
Hi, Emily.
Melissa Birdwell.
Hi, Melissa.
Thanks.
Is that everyone who's called in? Okay, it looks like we're good to go, Sam, so I'm going to hand it over to you.
Well, good morning. I am Samantha Slagle. I am the vice chair of this Planning One Region Council. Mr. Tim Perry is caught up in a meeting this morning. He's the chair of the council. He will join us as soon as he gets free, if he gets free. Kirby, did you go? You didn't do this top part of the mute and the executive order. Was that what you said at first?
That's what I said at first.
Just want to make sure all those bases got covered. Thank you. All right. Well, here's the part where we look at the minutes from last month and see if we can get an approval of those. So you'll take a second look at those, and if I can hear an approval with your name.
This is Vonda Wagner. I approve.
Thank you, Vonda. And can I get a second? Anyone want to?
This is Melissa. I'll second.
Thank you, Melissa. All right. So we'll move on to old business. We want to remind everybody that we're still kind of on a big project on that member enrollment. So we want to continue applications. I know this has been super challenging with COVID, and I'm not sure how much progress we've made in this endeavor. I have a lot of hope when we can see folks face to face and everybody starts rolling back in. But if you know of anyone or you yourself has not filled out one of the applications for this committee, we just want to know who you are and get that data documented for the state. So, all right. So now we're going to move on to the reason we're all here today. One of the most exciting parts of the year is our actual needs assessment report. I know that we sent out an SOS about a month ago and asked for both the adult and the children's committee to kind of have the subcommittees to have a sub meeting and meet prior to this event today, so we could kind of brainstorm and throw out what we thought we were going to be the prevalent needs of the community and kind of gather our thoughts there, then to bring here, and then we can vote on that with all of us gathered. So actually, I guess I will go first. I am the chair of the adult committee for Region 1, and Vonda Wagner is the vice chair. So, and with us, we worked with Hunter Hancock from Disability Services. Hunter is not with us today. He has had a loss in his family, and so we want to send him some thoughts there, and he will join us next round, I have no doubt. But he has helped us greatly, and actually, Hunter took a couple of these goals to work on the other aspects of it, to write it up. But for the adult team, I'm going to read over what we thought about would be good for the 2021 year. So if you guys have done this before, you know that we look at having two goals, one for the mental health category, or two in each category, I mean, two in mental health, two in substance abuse. And so with the substance abuse, Vonda, you may have to help me because I wrote it real sloppy because it was Hunter's that he took. So what we looked at were having more treatment options, more acute beds in that initial treatment crisis phase. And Vonda, I don't think I wrote down what his second one was. I'm not sure what that was about. So we wanted more acute beds for we're thinking, and we were really torn on how COVID's going to play out. How do we even put COVID life into our thinking? Because we don't know. We have no idea what the back end looks like. So at what stage of, quote, crisis are we going to need to build a safety net for folks? And so, Vonda, did you happen to write down that second substance abuse goal?
I'm sorry, I know you were looking.
You did not. Oh, my gosh, we're in trouble. I was leaning very much on Hunter because he never misses either. Okay. And then I think we were looking at housing. We were looking at long-term housing, transitional housing out of acute centers would have been, I think, our second goal. So I would like for any of the adult committee or anybody with us here, do you have any thoughts on what's going on out in our world in Tennessee in the substance abuse realm that would be better avenues for us to address in the needs assessment? More acute beds on the front end and more long-term housing, transitional housing on the back end. Any thoughts, anything anybody wants to add with that, or opposition to those two things, insights on what the substance abuse needs might be in the adult world in 6 months to a year? Christy Tipton, I see you're here. You may have some great ideas in that realm.
I am so sorry. I was on another call. Can you tell me what we're talking about? And I might have some great ideas.
That's okay. what do you see as the number one, going to be the number one need in about 6 months to a year from now? What do our people really need out there? What are we missing? And we've built all these things and services, but what's missing? What's the missing link that we want to work towards?
You know, that's very difficult. I think we are seeing such an increase here at Turning Point with overdoses and suicide attempts. I think those, we're going to have to increase those services. And within 6 months, you know, you're going to need all those folks. Hopefully we can get stabilized, you know, is the hope. And we'll be sending those out to you guys, an outpatient, you know. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're seeing is just an increase of overdose risk. Fentanyl is huge right now. So we're having a lot of people come in that are just in shock that they tested positive for fentanyl.
Okay. All right. Any other thoughts about what that might, any other ideas?
And this is Roger Caswell. One of the things that we've talked about, and we've talked about a little bit, is the fact that so many of the people that leave inpatient do not follow up. And I'm not sure what we could put into place. And again, we're going to be working with Frontier on some of these ideas. But there is a very high percentage of noncompliance outside, going outside of the inpatient centers. And that's one of our metrics within Ballot Health, actually, is to try and improve that number.
Okay. Any thoughts about what? Any thoughts about what that would look like?
Follow-up calls from someone, be it from Ballot, be it from Frontier, be it from that's one thing we haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the needs we have is how do we combat this high rate of noncompliance?
Roger, you're exactly right. One thing that we have done here is try to follow up. You know, we've got the COVID hotline team, and there's not a whole lot of calls coming in during the day typically. So they've spent quite a bit of time calling folks that either have appointments coming up or didn't show for their appointments. And honestly, it's about a 20% answer rate. And yeah. They try mornings, they try afternoons, they try evenings, and still can't seem to get that above about 20%.
That's great food for thought. Thank you, guys. Any other ideas on the substance abuse realm? Jill, did you say what you were going to say?
Well, two things. Just a thought on what you were just speaking about follow-up. I know, like, for myself, any time that I have need to call in about a bill or, I mean, just personally speaking, I don't know if it's even possible, and I know that this would be a big wish list, but, you know, trying to help someone navigate records but if there was just one person that they actually knew, oh, that's Jill calling. They may actually have a question, you know, maybe, but is there any way that, I mean, to have like a patient advocate or for something like that? And I don't know that that's, again, I realize that's a huge wish list, but I think just a cold call and just like, oh, I recognize that number. I'll either get it later but I think a lot of times people aren't always in the best spot, but if they know specifically, it could help or hurt. But I think just knowing a name and not just, you know, someone calling to remind them of an appointment. I mean, there's just a little bit more of a connection there, or accountability, or, you know, especially if they've developed some, you know, it's someone that's helped them, they might be less likely to avoid that call.
Wouldn't it be cool if they were a CPR a peer in that role?
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
A great concept.
Sorry to butt in. I am a peer, and I work in the community. This may just be some anecdotal data, but one of the things that I'm encountering, by the way, this is Jay Zimmerman. I'm with the VA, but I also work with, my job is to engage with community partners. And one of the things that I'm encountering, and maybe one of the reasons we're having trouble reaching people, and I'm speaking to not just veterans, what we're seeing here in Johnson City, with when I'm out in town and downtown Johnson City, downtown Bristol, whatever, due to the lack of beds and the restrictions on beds, and we're getting people, you know, that they don't have a bed for in Knoxville that are sent up here. And then when they get discharged, they're going back and they're trying to get a bus back to Knoxville, and they're disappearing in and out of the area. Which is also making follow-up very difficult, because if they're not from here and then they go back to wherever they were shipped from, simply because, like, that's the only bed they could find for detox or mental health treatment or whatever, you know, that's proving difficult, I think, for a lot of people that I'm encountering when I'm out, you know, talking to other providers in the community. Just anecdotal, but that's what I'm seeing.
Well, that's a great point. Thank you, Jay. I think that hits on several points of what we're all saying. Go ahead, Roger.
I think that's a great point. We are seeing some people from Knoxville and west of us because of lack of bed space there as well. We're also seeing some people from Southwest Virginia drift this way. We've had some people that were discharged from Marion kind of drift or be sent this way as well. One of the things that we are struggling with right now is the fact that and Frontier, is everybody's dealing with this. I'm not saying it's a valid problem or a Frontier problem. It's across the state, maybe even the country. But it's not easy to access. There are Frontier. I'm putting my mouth. Frontier and Ballard with Respond do a great job of seeing all these folks, but we're the only gateways. It's hard for some of these folks to even know where to go, how to access our services. And I think it's that kind of pratfall that our communities engage in. Basically, what we're trying to say, I don't know what I'm trying to say, I'm just fumbling, but there is a lack of awareness, overall awareness. The people that are in the system, They stay in the system because there is so much that impedes their progression in the treatment. And part of that is the lack of resources. Part of that is this what you said about the VA, or about these people coming from different parts of the area being sent back? There are so many gaps, it's hard to maintain that linkage.
This sounds so we need a peer advocate navigator.
That would be wonderful. That would be great.
To assign the people. That's perfect. I think all these kind of roll together, you know, it's like get enough beds in your community and then have the care in your community for these folks. So I think we're all kind of on the same track. If we can sort of, is there anything else that anybody wants to add to this before we kind of fluff this out into two goals? But I think they very much fit together.
This is Jill again. What I was going to originally say is, I mean, I'm sure that it would be addressed inpatient and being addressed outpatient, but, you know, a lot of times the root of a lot of this is trauma. I just want to reinforce, you know, I don't feel like I would be doing my job if I didn't mention that, you know, just addressing the trauma and building resilience in these folks.
So, Jill, when you say that, are you speaking at all about the trauma-informed care of the initial first faces you see when you get there, or the trauma care that the clinicians are doing, or just broader being aware of how this plays into it?
Well, I mean, and going back to what we just spoke about, you know, a navigator / advocate / peer, I mean, I think that's trauma-informed care. So I think, honestly, from beginning to, you know, continuation, obviously trauma-informed care, but addressing their specific trauma, because as we know, you know, pretty much everyone that is, you know, in this state or working through these challenges, I mean, have trauma that possibly has led them to where they are, and addressing their specific trauma. So really both.
Okay. All right. These are great. This is great stuff to work with, and I think we absolutely can come up with two things for our substance abuse side. All right. So I'm going to kind of switch gears, but it doesn't go very far. The mental health side for the adult, I think we're sort of piggybacking on what's been said for the past maybe year or so. Our primary thing that we kind of came up with would be workforce development. And I think that speaks to what we were saying a minute ago, where you got to have the beds, but you also have to have the staff to run these beds, and you got to pay these staff to be well-trained, well-qualified, and stick around. And we're seeing that. There's just not enough money in our system. Kids are not going to school for this anymore. We're going to be in a severe crisis. I think those words might could be used already. I'm an LCSW, so being here in East Tennessee, I'm like a needle in a haystack, and, you know, we have a whole Medicare population that can't be served by anybody else. It's just a mess. So the workforce development was actually one of the goals I think we put forth last year as well. And then a second goal would be that mental health housing, just more and more housing for folks. Now, I think the housing piece gets a little the issues, I think, in there are, you know, you got HUD, you have rules, you have, are you a felon? All these things that play into it, I think, could be barriers. I understand why they're there, but we just don't have necessarily enough housing for everybody. And I think the housing with the COVID situation is probably going to exponentially rise. I think we're seeing that already. I can't tell you how many stories I'm hearing of, I live on this country road and I'm just seeing these people now. They just walk, you know, like you'd see downtown, but they're out here, and I think the housing is going to be a big thing. So those were the two things that we were kind of looking at. What are some other thoughts about mental health needs in our region? Or does anybody disagree that those those are kind of the two primary things that we're still looking at? Okay. Well, does anybody have any passion for either one of those things? They feel like they want to, or any of these four that they want to get with one of us to help us sort of tease this out, find our data, and help with this. Does anybody have something along the way that they really are passionate about? Okay. All right. So then that's what we're going to probably roll with for the mental health side and the substance abuse stuff on the adults. So any questions, concerns, now would be the time. All right. Well, then we will move on to our CNY counterparts. Melissa or Kayla, I'm not sure how you guys want to do it, but I will turn it over to you. Kirby, can you hear me?
I can't see, so because my computer's not working. Is Kayla on the call? Because I think she was planning to talk about it. Oh, she said, I just got a message. She said her audio isn't working.
wonder. I can't see. She must be on one of the phones looking to see if maybe we could unmute her, if that was it. But
hey, Sam?
Yeah.
Kayla actually sent me a brief synopsis of what took place in the CNY meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind to read basically what they are pushing for, and then we could just open it up to the council.
Melissa, are you okay with that?
I have it too on email, so I don't care to talk about it either. Either way is fine.
Okay, well, if you want to go ahead and do it since you're on that committee, that's fine.
Sure. I just had to find it. Sorry. Okay, so what we talked about, first of all, one of the things we did, which we'd be happy to update you guys on too, is just talk about behavioral health safety net for kids. We spent a few minutes just doing kind of an update on that because that's something that's so new. And then as far as goals and things we would like to see, we talked about everybody was in favor of increasing A&D treatment to support particularly adolescents and stepping down from residential treatment, much like you guys are talking about with the adult world. That can include IOP, training for current therapists on evidence-based A&D treatment, and more family involvement for the adolescents who have a substance abuse disorder. So we felt like we were kind of missing people, especially in the step down, because it's not easy to step down from something like residential to, let's say, an outpatient where you may not be able to get an appointment for but once every 6 weeks. So we really are trying to beef up some of that. And then the other thing we talked about, which was very big for everybody, was recruitment and retention of mental health providers, because there seems to be a shortage. Again, it's probably not just in our area, but even across the state, not just licensed providers, which would be wonderful, but just providers in general. So that was our two. Is everyone still there?
Ma'am.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm done.
Sounds like that must be the way to go, Melissa. You guys have thought that out well.
Oh, I was worried there were no comments, so I didn't know if we did a terrible job or a good job.
I'm going to say no news is good news. They'll tell us if they don't like it, I imagine. And then did you have two others? Was that one category?
That was two categories. So the first one was the substance abuse one with the step down and the evidence-based treatments. And then the second was for mental health, because we noticed the shortage of mental health providers and the difficulty in trying to hire and recruit.
So, Kirby, do we need to do an official vote on this, or can we just move forward?
So, typically what councils do is after this conversation, they'll put together the top four, so the two mental health and the two substance abuse, which every council does it different. It looks like with Region 1, you have one adult mental health need and one children's mental health need, one adult substance abuse need and one children's substance abuse need. And once that's put together, you can send it out via email to the council to see if they agree on that, because you won't meet again before they're due. They're due on April 15th. and then you can just, that's it. If I'm not hearing any feedback now from what you've all discussed, so I would move forward with what you have, and then you can just send it out for a final review to your council via email.
Anyone object to that? Speak now, please. Sounds like a plan. Thank you, Kirby. All right. Well, we will move on to the last of this. Any reports? So we'll start with the adult committee, which is myself. Only thing I would have to report is that we're actively doing this needs assessment. So CMY committee. Kayla can't speak because her microphone. Melissa, I'm assuming you guys are with us and that this is what's going on in your report right now. Would that be accurate?
You are correct. Yes, ma'am.
And Mr. Kim Perry, I don't think, has made it with us. I'm looking here. Okay. Legislative committee, which is headed by Tim Perry on this committee, and then I can probably speak to that I'm not aware of any active reports from them. Do we have any MCOs on the call? All right. Inpatient, I know we have Mr. Roger. Any reports from any inpatient facilities?
Yeah, it's Roger. Our volume has maintained. We're still at high volume and high acuity. We have mentioned this to the Frontier, and they kind of see it too. The acuity overall has increased during COVID times, especially the last several weeks for whatever reason. We are seeing a marked increase in aggression and psychosis. We have several people on various more restrictive levels than what we used to. We have level one and level two, which means level one is within arm's reach at all times, and level two is within eyesight at all times. And we have seen a marked increase in the number of levels that we've had to initiate with our patients just because of their acuity. Our volumes did go down a little bit during the holiday, but we are almost at capacity again. There was a time where we had some beds available daily, but those times have went away, and we're almost full all the time. So the need for inpatient does persist.
Thank you, Roger. Thanks for doing the good work out there, too, man. Any other inpatient before we get to crisis and CSU? All right. Christy, do you have anything to report from crisis or CSU?
Absolutely. I think we're seeing the same thing as Roger. Roger and I talk pretty often about that, and we are seeing a high level of acuity. I really think because of COVID, a lot of people are staying home until they just can't anymore. So they're coming in with some very acute symptoms. So we really struggled to get our census back up on CSU, but it's going now for sure. We're seeing a lot of volume now. But because of the acuity, a lot of those folks that we were seeing in crisis were having to go straight to Woodridge or Creekside. But that has definitely leveled off. I think we're all pretty full right now. And we're seeing, like I said earlier, we're seeing a whole lot of detox, very, very severe detox with multiple drugs, and a lot of people coming in just shocked when they test positive for fentanyl, because it's being put in heroin, it's being put in meth, and so a lot of folks are really scared about that and are trying to come in and detox and get clean. So we're definitely seeing a whole lot of that right now. Walk-in has been very busy, so that continues to go 24/7. I have nursing staff available. I have a couple of positions open right now, but we're trying to keep a nurse in walk-in because of the major detox that we're seeing come in, just for safety. So that continues. Detox and CSU is full. Residential is rolling too. I think they're all pretty full and continue to take referrals daily. So I think that's it with crisis.
Thank you so much, Christy. Youth Villages, any representatives from there today? How about NAMI? Community Justice? TCCY? APRC?
Oh, can we go back to TCCY? Sorry, I didn't unmute in time.
No, that's okay. Go for it.
This is Jill Stott. I will be happy to put this link in the chat box, but we have an event coming up for our East Region Councils. He is a phenomenal speaker, but it's opportunity in the midst of a pandemic. And our guest speaker is Matthew Portell. He's a principal of Fall Hamilton Elementary School and does a fantastic job. And some of you may have already heard of him, but and just creating trauma-informed care in his schools. Excuse me. But this will kind of be very specific to, of course, us being in the middle of a pandemic. So that event is Friday, February the 26th, from 9 until 11. But I'll be happy to put the Eventbrite link to register for folks that may be interested. Also, we have Children's Advocacy Days coming up this year. It will be on a virtual platform, and it's March the 9th through the 12th. That's 4 days. We'll be doing 10 o'clock until 1 o'clock all 4 of those days. We don't have an agenda set just yet, but I can also put the link in the chat for that as well. You just register once for all 4 days, and you join when you can. But that's March 9th through the 12th.
Thank you very much, Jill. Anyone here from ADRC? TSPN? PMHCA? Disability Rights? Any other providers? Ann Kirby, do you have anything from the department?
I do. Let me pull up my update. Just a brief update since we last met. All right. Okay, so just a few things going on in the department and across the state since we last spoke. One that we've already taken care of is the 2021 needs assessments, which those worksheets should be completed and submitted back to me via email on or before April 15th. That's a 2-week extension. Typically these are due on April 1st. As always, if you have any questions or concerns, please don't hesitate to reach out. And the department also has a fast facts portal available. It's just a tool that you might need for your data, to help with your data. It's not required to use it. It's just there as a resource. As always, you can use data from wherever you find it. So your own agency that you work for or wherever. Also, the department is pleased to announce the release of the FY 2021 Creating Affordable Housing announcement of funding. The department is seeking proposals from agencies and organizations throughout the state of Tennessee to develop new, safe, quality, and affordable permanent housing options for people experiencing mental illness, substance use disorder, including opioid use disorder, and or co-occurring disorder. An additional focus of this funding announcement is for individuals ready for discharge from one of the regional mental health institutes, including those who are uninsured. Completed proposals are due by February 5th. This announcement was also shared via email last week or the week prior, but I have a link here in my update for you where you can access more information concerning this announcement of funding on the department website. And there's also a question and answer section as well that they just recently posted yesterday, I believe. The FY20 Joint Annual Report between the Planning and Policy Councils and the department is complete and has been posted to the department website. I encourage you all to check it out. It highlights all of the achievements that the department saw in the last fiscal year, as well as achievements within the regional councils. So I do encourage you to take a look at that. I know Region 1 definitely has a piece in there. Let's see here. The department is receiving a new federal grant to expand the System of Care Across Tennessee network. The four-year, $12 million grant from SAMHSA expands SOCAT services to 13 new rural counties for service availability in all 95 counties. The new grant will build upon lessons learned throughout the two decades of System of Care implementation in Tennessee communities. Over the past 3 years, SOCAT teams across the state utilizing high-fidelity wraparound services have been able to maintain a 90% success rate of keeping children, youth, and young adults in their homes and within their communities. In the application, department grant writers focused on rural and distressed areas of the state. Counties receiving services under this grant include Bledsoe, Clay, Fentress, Grundy, Hancock, Hardeman, Jackson, Lake, McNary, Morgan, Perry, Scott, and Wayne counties. And the community mental health agency partner providers engaged in this work are Frontier Health, Helen Ross McNabb Center, Mental Health Cooperative, Pathways Behavioral Health, Professional Care Services, Tennessee Voices, and Volunteer Behavioral Health Care Services. The Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, along with the Department of Health, kicked off a new campaign centered around the risk of drug overdose and suicide during the winter holidays. The campaign, called Resilient Tennessee, focuses on building resilience and strengthening community connections to prevent the tragic loss of life to overdose and suicide. Behavioral health experts worry the climate around the COVID-19 pandemic may worsen the rise in overdoses traditionally associated with the winter holidays and could also result in increased deaths from suicide. Through media messaging around overdose and suicide prevention, social media outreach, and virtual trainings and events, the Resilient Tennessee campaign seeks to empower Tennesseans with the tools and knowledge to overcome the personal challenges they face, watch out for and help those around them, and emerge on the other side stronger than ever. For more information about this campaign, including resources and a calendar of events, please visit www.tntogether.com. And my last update, the department is receiving a new federal grant to expand criminal justice alternatives for Tennesseans living with addiction. This $6 million grant from the U.S. Department of Justice will cover 10 project sites. Services under the grant begin with a collaborative community review of services under a standardized model called Sequential Intercept Model, otherwise known as SIMS mapping. The county-specific report is then used to prioritize needs and make decisions about spending additional funding. Excuse me. The new grant builds on a previous $6.5 million grant from the Department of Justice that is currently serving 11 Tennessee counties. Additional strategies employed by the grant following the SIMS model event include law enforcement and other first responder diversion programs for people experiencing substance use, embedding social services with law enforcement in order to rapidly respond to drug overdoses, and evidence-based treatment such as medication-assisted treatment, as well as recovery support services, including transitional or recovery housing and peer recovery support services. And that is what I have.
Thank you, Kirby. Does anybody else have anything to report before we adjourn? Okay.
Sam.
Kirby.
Sam.
Yeah?
I'm sorry. This is Christy. I meant to mention about the COVID hotline. I just wanted to mention that to everybody. We are continuing to – we have a I don't know if group, everybody on this group knows or not, but we obtained a FEMA grant a few months ago for a COVID hotline, a virtual counseling line to be available so folks can just call and get resources for basic needs due to the pandemic, or just get some brief counseling and debriefing related to the pandemic. So we continue to see some calls from that. We continue to do some follow-ups. So that line is open 12 to 10, 7 days a week. We've got a couple of events coming up. I just did a podcast with Jennifer and Josh due to talking about the pandemic, promoting that as well. But we have a couple of events coming up in March. We're doing a Narcan event where we are putting some information together about the COVID hotline and just ways to cope with the pandemic and giving out Narcan, and that will be March 13th. And then the next Tuesday, I think that's the 16th, I believe, we are doing a drive-by lunch for first responders here at Turning Point. So we're really excited about that. And that grant will continue until the end of June. So if you have folks struggling with the pandemic and need a little bit extra support, we're available.
Thank you, Christy. All right, anybody else?
Hey, Samantha, Kurt just put in the message box that Governor Lee will be giving the 2021 State of the State address on February 8th at 6 p.m. Central Time. Just a reminder to everyone.
Thank you, Kurt. All right. Okay. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Oh, wait. Sam, sorry.
That's okay.
I saw a few more people joined the call after we took attendance, so I just want to make sure that we get them for the minutes. I know I just said Kurt. I know he joined after attendance was taken. I see Emily Sullins joined. Lynn Keck joined. Is there anyone I have missed that joined? Wendy Ramsey? No, I said your name earlier. I'm sorry. is there anyone else who has joined the call that didn't get their attendance taken at the very beginning? Okay, and Christy just put in the COVID resource line to everyone, 1-833-4-FH-COVID. I hope I said that correctly. Thank you, Christy.
Thank you, Kirby. All right. Anything else on this snowy Tuesday? All right. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
This is Melissa. I'll make the motion.
And can I get a second?
This is Christy. I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Christy. All right. Our next meeting is slated to be Tuesday, May 11th at 10 a.m. Kirby, I'm assuming that unless we hear otherwise, that's going to be a face-to-face meeting?
Yeah, we'll plan for face-to-face at this point, and we'll just wait on hearing if the executive order has been extended at all.
Okay. So Tuesday, May 11th, 2021, 10 a.m. at Frontier Health Corporate Office there on 1167 Spratland Park Drive in Gray. Have a great month and look forward to speaking to you guys soon.
Bye.